Leonard Schlain is our guest here on the Paula Gordon Show, both a doctor and a writer. Bill Russell.
One of the charming things, interesting things, challenging things is what I think of as the paleoanthropological perspective. I don't think of that very often. But the sort of in focus, out of focus of short history and long history. And in one sense, you go back 150,000 years, taking that as the origin of what Ian Tattersall calls anatomically modern humans. And 150,000 years ago seems like a long time for those of us that think that last week is ancient history, which I think Americans typically do. But at the same time, from an evolutionary standpoint, from the standpoint of the Earth, that's just, it's a heartbeat.
It's a blink. It's a blink of the evolutionary eye.
And on the one hand, it seems like a stunningly long time and time within which many changes could happen, physical as well as psychological. On the other hand, it looks like it is so fast, so rapid, that not much of significance could happen in that
I think that our species was born in the crucible of a crisis, and the crisis was the fact that humans are distinguished by two physical characteristics that set us off from every other animal. And the first one is that we are the only heel-to-toe, upright, walking animal on this planet. And the second one is that we have the largest brain per body size of any other animal. And those two things are actually incompatible.
And the incompatible.
And the reason why is that we started standing up about 4.5 million years ago, and nobody quite knows why we stood up, because it's not a very effective way of moving around. I mean, there's not a single land predator that you could outrun, and there's no major prey that you could run after and catch. And if you took any man listening to this program and took his clothes off and parachuted him into the center of the African Serengeti, how long would he last? I mean, you know, he would be cat food in no time flat. So nobody knows why we stood up in the first place. But I guess after about 2 million years, we realized our hands were free. And we dimly surmised that if only we had a really big brain, then we could imagine a weapon our free hands could brandish, and then we would be really dangerous.
Now, we didn't do any of that.
I'm saying this as if that was what our wish list was. Well, we got our wish about 500,000 years ago. Our brain underwent this extraordinary hyperinflation routine where we added a whole pound of brain tissue in a very short period of time, so that when Homo sapiens begins, we're standing upright and we have the really, really big brain. Now, the reason I say they're incompatible is that when you stand up, a very interesting thing happens. The birds, the fish, the mammals, and the reptiles all move with their vertebral column horizontal to the earth. We move vertically, which means that we have now positioned directly above our anus a mass of intestines, so that every human is at risk for being turned inside out if they go for a stroll after a particularly heavy lunch. So if you look at a picture of the human pelvis, you'll notice it's shaped like a bowl. And one of its architectural functions is to contain these intestines and prevent them from falling out your rectum. Now, the bony hole in the center of the pelvis, as a result, is quite small. So the human female has a problem unknown in the animal world. She has the largest brain baby sitting above the narrowest bony canal of any other species. And we are the only complex animal that's the females sustain a high rate of maternal mortality trying to deliver their young. I mean, you know, there's no other animal when they go into labor, they call for help. I mean, you know, most of the females that go in the back of the burrow or the cave and the blub, 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 they pump out litters of 6 and 8 and 10 and 12. They don't die in childbirth. So nothing like this has ever happened before. So the human female was under a stress that the male wasn't, and she needed to figure out the connection between sex and pregnancy. There are 3 million sexually reproducing species on this planet, and there is nothing in their observable behavior to indicate that any of them have the slightest idea what the purpose of sex is for. And some woman somewhere said, wait a minute, this kicking in my belly is the direct result of that transient moment of pleasure I had with that man over there.
And a long time ago.
And then that means you got to think in terms of months. And that's very hard to do for an animal. And then when she extrapolates into the future, she realizes she could die as a result of getting pregnant, which is the result of having sex. So she has an epiphany. She gains a power that no female has ever possessed before. And it is the power to refuse sex when she's ovulating. And as any man listening to this program knows, that changed everything.
This all seems stunningly maladaptive from a Darwinian standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, you would have thought that we would have gone, either we should have become extinct, because having your healthy young females die along with their babies trying to deliver their young is an extremely wasteful reproductive strategy.
And we did have 14 or 15 cousins in the hominid line. It's not that right. we just sprung completely alone. I mean, there were lots of experiments right. among these upright, two-legged, bipedal right. creatures.
And this one seems the least likely to
right.
succeed.
So you would have thought we would have evolved wider-hipped, ineffectually waddling women with bigger pelvises, or we should have evolved smaller brain babies. But neither one of those two things occurred. In fact, if you visit any cemetery prior to the 20th century and you look at the gravestones, it's extraordinary how many women died young and they died in childbirth. NPR had a statistic. They said that last year in rural Afghanistan, 25% of women died in childbirth. I mean, that's extraordinary. So,
well, and that represents really the experience of the species until right now in developed nations.
Yes, yeah. I mean, cesarean sections and anesthesia and blood replacement and all these modern things have made trying to squeeze that big skull through the little bony canal a much safer thing. But still, there isn't a woman alive that doesn't know that childbirth is a dangerous business.
I came across a study, and it doesn't show up in your book, and I'm curious if you're familiar with it. It was a reputable source. Unfortunately, I can't remember who it was. That had done, I think, the genetic study that said that at some point in human history, the population was down to a few thousand.
Right. Palumbo's work, that about 70,000 years ago, we were down to about 10,000 humans. And it's from that. That's the explanation that's usually given as to why the creative explosion occurred. You know, there's
say what the creative explosion.
I will.
Is.
You know, the you know, there's the greatest archaeological whodunit is the fact that we've been around for 150,000 years. We know that from molecular biology, and for the first 110,000 years, we were really no great shakes. I mean, you know, we made some slightly better tools, immigrated out of Africa, made this incredibly foolish decision to march right into the teeth of the worst ice age the planet has experienced. That's not very clever. But at any rate, about 40,000 years ago, suddenly, all over the world, nearly simultaneously, humans began to experience and practice all of the behaviors that we now associate with human cultures everywhere, such as consistently burying our dead, making perfectly good grave goods that we put in the tombs, creating representational art. I mean, you know, if nobody created representational art for the first 110,000 years, and then everybody started creating it after 110,000 years ago, what happened? One theory is that we, you know, that we had a brain mutation and that narrow little bottleneck that you were just describing, but I think I have an alternative explanation in my book. I think that a critical mass of humans finally figured out an insight of such import that it changed us as a species.
And that is
that we figured out we're going to die. We're the only animal that really knows we're going to die in from a very early age. I mean, a 5-year-old speaks grammatically correct sentences, knows it's going to have a birthday in a year from now, is not aware that it's going to die. It isn't until a child is about 7 or 8 or 9 years old that the full implications of what living in a limited time frame means. There's nothing in the observable behavior of other animals that indicates that they understand from an early age they're going to die.
This is Leonard Schlein. Let's go away so that I don't have to interrupt you, and we can come right back. Bill Russell, I, Paula Gordon, Leonard Schlein, who is speaking from many of the ideas that he's presented in Sex, Time, and Power, his latest book. Be with us when we return.